Just to give you a heads up, yesterday I scrapped just about everything I was going to do. So there may be a little fumbling for those of you who get worried about that. It's okay, I've got it, but there'll be a little bit of that going on. I'd also like to acknowledge that I've got it. But in standing up here without having everything scripted and looking out over the crowd and knowing different feelings and thoughts about time and the day and the sense, that I have to address in the morning, I have to address a fear or fears before I stand up and before I come before you, because it's not just what I know. It's not that sense of, oh, I'm totally good here, I've got this out there. And the reason I share that with you is that's what we're all called to do, is have that sense of, okay, my voice is needed. Or, okay, I'm called to step into this space. Okay, it may feel like we should just pull the covers over our heads in the morning and wait, but we're called to step forward into these places and in these times. And I want to hold up, and I'm going to hold up, try to hold up in the words, that that's in a way what you're doing this morning, even by coming out and being a part and creating this community. When we think about the events of the week and yesterday, I was thinking about how to make sense of it, and then I realized, oh, this is this day of Halloween, All Souls, Dia de los Muertos, and I'd never felt it with the sense of somebody who was gone coming forward to share like I did with Charles, Reverend Grady. It's actually his words that came forward and are in this time, and then the words around that. Clearings in the wilderness, what we have here. If we look at the events of the week and yesterday, I didn't know until I talked to Judy, I hadn't even read a headline about two African-American people shot down and killed in front of a Kroger's in Louisville, Kentucky, in the middle of the week because the shooter couldn't break into a black church because the doors were locked. So he just went out and went to the store. So that was in addition. And I was just weighted down. But I reached out. I reached out to Chris Bice, who's the minister at UU Congregation in Knoxville, Tennessee. It's been 10 years since they had a shooter enter their church. I reached out to Chris, and he said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just processing it. And that gave me a word for it. I'm processing it. We're processing it. I was in touch with Rabbi Rachel Jackson to say, we stand in solidarity and love with you. Is there anything we can do? And she said in her text back, I don't know. We're just processing it right now. I reached out to Judy Long and said, hey, or maybe she reached out to me first. And she said her heart and spirit were heavy. She was just processing it. And so we processed it a little over the phone. And I said, I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew that I was going to go ahead and work with Charles Grady's words and then Victoria Safford's response. And I talked to her about some of the thoughts, but they were in this piece, that as a clearing in the wilderness of this time, our time, that we are that a spiritual, moral, pastoral, prophetic clearing in the insanity of our time, into the difficulties of our time, into the anxiety and the fear. We are a clearing in the wilderness. The church exists to call you by your name and call you to account, to call you by your given name or chosen name, to acknowledge the shimmering constellation of identities that you comprise, your unique and unprecedented holiness and wholeness, and to call you to account. The congregation exists to hold us accountable to one another and to all people, all persons, every sacred living thing, even unto seven generations. Within the confines of its walls and regardless of its walls, the agenda of the church, the congregation, is infinite and eternal. It holds within the architecture of its building and the architecture of its worship in every wedding and in the dedication of each child in rituals of coming of age and in every funeral, every vigil, every time a committee lights a little chalice to commence its work. The congregation holds the arc of history, time out of time, so that we can move with integrity and joy through these times, through our own times, which are rough and tumble times, but maybe no more so than other times, other generations. Ever and always, it is a clearing in the wilderness, an orienting clearing, a place to get your bearing and restore you on your journey. Well, I talked about that kind of talk, and Judy said, "That's all fine, but I need something more. I need something to do." And I said, "Yeah, I know. Like what?" And she said, "I don't know. I just need something to do." She said, "I've cleaned my house." So Friday night, I'd been to the Moral Revival, the Poor People's Campaign, and where Reverend William Barber was scheduled to speak. And this was before Saturday's events. William Barber couldn't make it. Reverend Barber couldn't make it because he was caught in traffic. So he had to just Skype into the meeting for a little bit. But he said some things. He said, "Vote policy, not personality." He said, "Think policy, not personality." And then he went into the statistics for healthcare and how many people had died and how wrong it was that we didn't have healthcare for everyone. He talked about the dynamics of poverty and how wrong it was that so many, such a large percentage of our population are poor. He talked about, and this was in 5 minutes, he talked about the effect on children. And he made it all tied to children. Why is so much coming back around to how we treat our children at this time? Doesn't that tell you something? My guiding understanding of how to be in the world, the question I ask myself of everything I do, is this good for children? He said, "When your head is down, get up. Get up. And be encouraged, be stronger, be more engaged." So I had the thought with Judy, and I said, "Well, we can go vote, you know. We've got the power to vote." And she goes, "I need more than voting. I need something else." And then I realized, in that event, I didn't hear the specifics. I brushed over them as if, "No, these don't really count. I'm voting. I've already voted. These aren't things we can do." But I remembered something that was said to me earlier in the week by Chris Walters, who's downtown, and he has been working to change education system in this county for a long time. He's a native here. And he said, "You can protest, you can do all these different things, but you have to change who has the power." Because he said, "What people in power think and say is all right to do is what happens. You have to make it where they don't get to stay in power. You have to change who has the power." And he was working to do that. He was canvassing door to door to be sure everybody got out to vote. But the specifics from this meeting were that there are still phone banks you can volunteer to be involved in. There's still canvassing you can do. There was even a job, which I wouldn't take on a dare, but it's standing outside the polling place and explaining to people why they should vote no on the constitutional amendments. But then somebody last night was telling me how wonderful that had been. So do you have another suggestion just along those lines? Meg.
One of the things I always think about in these kind of times is ways we're deliberately building community and trying to think of ways that even outside of the political realm, we are coming together and reaching outside of our usual groups.
All right, I'll start over. Anytime any of these things happen, I always think about how are we building community, and not just in our own congregation or not just in our own friend groups, but how are we reaching outside and building community? And I don't really have any answers to that, except that yesterday I was talking to my neighbor, who I don't know very well, but you know, we're on a hello basis. And I was just thinking about, you know, maybe having a block party or having people come over, because I don't actually know my neighbors, and just kind of trying to think of ways to come together in that way. The block I happen to live on has people of different economic status and different racial identities, and so just thinking about that. Outside of what I usually do. I don't know.
Thank you.
I picked up the phone and called all of our younger relatives, the ones who are just old enough to vote, and I asked them if they were registered to vote and if they plan to vote. One said yes, another one said she wasn't sure yet because she just moved, but at least I made the calls.
Joe Robustelli and Becky Reed were the main organizers of the concert last night, or the presentation by Greg and Reggie. And one thing Joe did was he took flyers of the concert and the discussion to all the African-American churches in the area, and then got with Ronnie Pepper and organized how to get even more flyers out to other people. So he reached out in the community. So there are many things. And the biggest thing is to, in the face of these events, not to discount what you are doing by what you think it's not in relation to the big picture. Because you are building up the picture from all of your actions together. And I'll say something about the community. So I also, even as Judy was saying, that's not enough. I need something to do. I also kept coming back to this congregation, this real gathering of and in community as something we are doing. We don't think about that when we come together, but it's something we are doing. I'd like to start with words from Charles Grady again, because he was talking about the call to worship at White Bear Unitarian Universalist Congregation. And he said, each Sunday we are likely to hear a call to worship beginning with these words, come in, come into this house made holy by our presence. And here's what Charles said. Each time I hear it, a little red flag goes up in a corner of my mind. Do we really make holy, that is, sanctify this space just by being here? Isn't that a rather prideful, narcissistic thing to say? Why do we think ourselves so special? Maybe we could do with a little humility instead. Perhaps we should turn it around. Perhaps it is this special place with all its dreams, joys, sorrows, work, music, aspirations, trials, and celebrations pent up inside these walls that will make us, here's the line, if not exactly holy, then at least strengthened and renewed, heartened in community for the business of living. For the business of living. Now, I would, if Charles would hear, were here, I would ask to be in dialogue with that. I would say it's both and. Both and. This place that is made real by us being here, but then it is also more than us. And it's a place from which we go to do. It's a place we go from to do and know what we do is not just reactionary, but connected to a larger picture. This time of year, when the veil is thinnest, there's another way to think about that that offers up importance, and it was a way that Victoria played off of Charles's words. It was about a David Brooks column last year that about institutions, where he said they are thin, so this is playing with that thin and veil, and institutions that are thick, thick and thin. Some leave a mark on you, he said, and some you pass through with scarcely a memory. Thin institutions call forth thin commitments. There's an ever-present utilitarian calculus, he says, a transactional surface-level relationship where you tend to ask all the time, am I getting as much out of this as I'm putting in? Is this working for me? Do I like this? Do I like everything about this? Is anything bothering me? Can I do better elsewhere? Even if no money changes hands, it's very much a fee-for-service kind of feeling. But thick institutions, he said, have a different moral ecology. What a great phrase, a different moral ecology. People tend to like the version of themselves that is called forth by such places, a version of self called forth by such places. Even though such places demand a lot, a deep engagement of heart and mind and conscience, those who belong to them are motivated more by a sense of belonging and mutual benefit than by personal enrichment. You're looking inward and outward all at once, all the time. There's a sense that the thriving of the institution is good for the world in tangible and intangible ways. In a thin institution, you're just in it for yourself. People tell me, that doesn't make it bad, but people tell me how important it is to go to the Y, for example, or the new coffee shop, or to get together at the yoga studio, and it has that. But in a thick institution, self-interest blurs with the good of the whole, and the whole becomes very large, not just for the future, but from the past coming forward. David Brooks' own example was of a summer camp that he worked in years and years ago, where certain values about right relationship to other people and the land, values about right relationship infused every activity and transcended the activities. Congregations are very thick. We become part of something larger. Like the brave and loving heart of universalism, the interdependent web of which we are a part. In Christian language, the love that is neither caritas, charity, nor eros, affection, but agape, the love of other as oneself. In Jewish terms, it is I, thou. It is what the novelist Alice Walker meant when she had a character say, I knew that if I cut a tree, my arm would bleed. It is namaste, the holy in me, which greets as an old friend the holy in you. In Islam, it is submission, the loud, proud self willingly subsumed not by the community, but by the community's beautiful vision. It isn't set in stone, handed down on tablets. We shape that vision all together and describe it, speak it, sing it in a chorus of diverse voices. It evolves as we do over time. There's a kind of power that is stronger together, power that is more grounded with a deep, wide root system, more flexible, more lasting than any power any single person can claim all on their own. You know what that is? That's the power of love. Love doesn't exist by itself. That's the power of love, and it is reciprocal. That's what makes the organization thick. This place will hold you, steady you, center you, and care for you when you're not strong on your own. Congregations are very thick. When the shooter in Pennsylvania yesterday shot up the Tree of Life congregation and killed now 11 people, I was thinking about this. He literally attacked Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. That's where Mr. Rogers lived. He attacked this thick organization, bringing the past forward, telling us that we are something more than fear. He attacked that which we would be and say aloud. The Torah was open yesterday to the story in Genesis of Sarah and Abraham greeting three strangers with radical hospitality into the open door. Their tent, the founders of Judaism. They opened their tent, they fed them, they washed their feet, they gave them rest. And who did those strangers turn out to be? Angels. They were three angels. Open door hospitality, being this place to welcome the angels of our better nature. By coming together, we actually keep angels alive. We invite the angels of our better nature. We invite the angels of our courageous nature. We invite the angels of our creative nature, of our loving nature, to be among us. Our better angels. Who said that? Are better angels who use that phrase? Abraham Lincoln. When did he use it? A time of civil war. It turns out, too, that Sarah was 90 years old and the angels had come to tell her that she was going to have a child. somebody over here goes, oh no. But it literally was to bring life. And it turned out to be true. The shooter attacked that very notion of hospitality, of community. So if you look to what are we doing? Look at our security plan. Look at our security team that greeted you in the parking lot. The security team. They are our team of allowing us to be that place of hospitality. Allowing us to gather together and be that open door. I hadn't thought of the security team as angels, but they're sort of allowing the angels of our better nature. Remember that Agudas Israel, 5 years ago, what was it? It was our home. It was the tent that opened the door when we were wandering in the wilderness while we restored the sanctuary. They attacked our home. So what do? The voice of Judy is in my ear. I need something to do. Every one of us, go home, write them a note. Write Agudas Israel a note. You don't have to know a member there, but write them a note. saying we stand with you in love and support, saying that we are with you together in community in this community. We are with you as this thick place in our world. And thank you for being a part of us being here. This afternoon, there's something you can do too. There's a vigil for the Tree of Life congregation and for Jewish communities around the world. It's this afternoon at 3 in Pack Place. It's in the park in front of City Hall in Asheville. And so we can all be there. That was a text from Rachel Jackson that went out, and you have it. She said, "We stand together. We embrace one another for no other reason than we are all created in the likeness of the divine. Here in Western North Carolina, our neighbors of all ethnicities and religions have reached out in droves, indicating their support and solidarity. We as a Jewish people of Western North Carolina stand together. We as a people of Western North Carolina stand together a little closer, hug each other a little tighter. We pray for healing of spirit for all Jews, for healing of hearts for the victims' families, for the healing of bodies for the survivors. We pray for healing, replacing hate with kindness for our country. We pray for peace in our world and in our lifetime." Thank you for being this thick institution, this community. Does anybody have anything else that they would like us to do? If anybody would like to go to Asheville and needs a ride, Meg, are you willing to give a ride? So downstairs after the service, Meg, hold up your hand so people can see you. Anybody who needs a ride, I'll offer a ride as well. So anybody who needs a ride. It's a mighty long way from here to yonder. It's a mighty long way from here to there. Here to there, we're gonna take it one step at a time so that we can make that walk from here to there. Sam Cooke. Change is going to come.